So we're on the top of Kuf Beis Amud Beis. Tana Rabbanan Hanosei Mos L'Shlucho Likach Lo Chitin V'Lokach Men Siorin. So what we know until now is that if you consign a person to take your wool and color it red, and instead he went ahead and he colored it black, according to Rabbi Meir, the Tzaba was Kona B'Shinui, he becomes a Gazlan, and he pays Keshas HaGzeil. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the din is Yodo Al HaTachtona. The dyer will be paid wages. It means that he still. You want to sit there, Benji? Is that good for you, or you want to take a chair? I'll meet you here. So again, let's just go over it one more time. According to Rabbi Meir, as soon as the dyer changes the color, right, he was consigned to color it red and he colored it black. At that moment, he becomes a gazlan. And if he becomes a gazlan, he actually gains something here because he pays only the market value of the wool. Now it's worth a heck of a lot more because it's been dyed. So he gets all that profit through, as we say, crime pays. He's a gazlan. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda holds Yoro al Tachton, which means he still remains an uman and a poel. He's still working on behalf of the Baal Bais. That agreement is still valid and binding. We don't consider it a shinui. So he's not a gazlan. And therefore, you might say, well, if he's not a gazlan, he has the right to demand wages. He should be paid for his work. But here we have a halacha, a principle called Yoro al Tachtona, which means that he cannot demand the full wages because, after all, he's not giving back to the Baal Bais exactly what the Baal Bais is paying him for. So to demand full wages for dyeing something black when he was consigned to dye it red, that's not fair. On the other hand, some wages he should get, according to Rabbi Yehuda, so he'll get the lower price between Shvach and Yitzir. So if the Shvach is greater than the Yitzir, meaning the value of the wool is now enhanced way beyond the amount of money that the uman spent on dyeing the wool, then he'll get the lower amount of money, which in this case is the expenditure of the yitzir. If, on the other hand, the yitzir was very high and the profit margin, the shvach, was very low, then he'll only get the profit. And now we're talking about a different case, and we're trying to compare it to the original case. Here what happened was that the Baal Bais sent money in the hands of a shliach to purchase chitim, and instead the shliach bought siorim. Now, from a business perspective, it's not necessarily a bad idea to do so, because we're going to see that, at least in one particular scenario, the market price of the Saorim appreciated a lot more than had he bought Chitin. So it was a good investment. You know, there was a mad rush on barley that year. Maybe the animals were hungry for barley, whatever. So the Mefarshim say, now, the problem with learning this sugya that we're learning now here on the top of Kuf Beis Amud Beis is that we're only seeing a fraction of the sugya. The main address for this sugya is actually in Bav Metzia on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. But the Mefarshim take the sugya in Bav Metzia and they use it here to shed a light on our sugya. It's sort of like Hashlama, you know, one sugya complements the other. So although what I'm going about to tell you is sort of like written between the lines, you can't even if you used a magnifying glass, you wouldn't find it here. But it's based on the sugya in Bava Metzia. This is not a case of a regular classical shlichus. Haraya, the proof is that if the Bali appreciates, then the shliach, in quotation marks, sorry, he's not really a shliach, he is going to cash in on part of that appreciation, on part of that shvach. Which means that he's not just a shliach in the classical sense, meaning I send him, as in Yiddish we call it a shikyingel, you know, he's just sent across, you know, I send him to the market just to bring me back. But rather, he is a partner in this business venture.
So what's the deal? The deal is that he will take the money from A,
right,
and he sells it to C, and they're going to share the profit between them? Is that
So you're right and you're not right. You know, Alpha, you're right with regard to 50%, but not the other 50%. Again, there's a heck of a lot written here that's not here on the page. You have to go into the sugi with blind faith if you're not learning. If you're not learning Bar Metzia Kuf Daf, 50% of the money that Reuven gives to Shimon, Reuven is the Baal HaMos and Shimon is the Shliach, 50% of that is considered a Pikadon. I'll explain. And the other 50% is considered a Halva. Because what's going to happen is that if the Bali appreciates, half the profits go to the Shliach and half to the Baal HaMos. And what's happening here is that Reuven and Shimon are both contributing to this landing, you know, to this profit. Reuven is contributing the bucks. I mean, he's giving the cash. You know, that's the capital. That's a major part of any business. Without capital, you can't invest any money. So Reuven has to get his share. Shimon, on the other hand, is contributing two things. Number one, he's putting in the effort to go out to the market and try to find the best buyer who's willing to pay the best price and get the best deal. And number two, he's going to use his business acumen to research where is the best investment, meaning according to all the predictions, you know, with the graphs and so forth and so on, he becomes like a financial advisor. So what we're going to do in this case is to give fair due to both the Baal HaMos and to the Shliach. Again, I'm calling him a Shliach, which is itself a little confusing, but Shliach in the sense that he's going to go out there and make the purchase. What we're going to do is we're going to say the following. First of all, the Baal HaMos wants to be guaranteed that at least half of his investment he'll get back. This is what you call, I guess in modern language, you call it a low-risk investment. You know, like the banks who will guarantee that, you know, at least a 1%, you know, 1% dividends you'll get. But your money is secure. So he wants to know at least half his money is secure. That's called a pikadon. Which means that in any event, no matter what happens, whether or not the price of barley goes up or goes down, he, the Baal HaMos, is guaranteed that 50% of the mos that he gave over to the Shliach, he will get returned. And the Shliach, from his perspective, is willing to take the risk and guarantee the Baal HaMos that 50% of his mos will be returned, no matter what happens. Even though he's really putting himself at risk, because let's say he invests and it goes really, really plummets all the way down, he won't even have the money to pay back the Baal HaMos who gave him that. But that he's willing to take upon himself. Why? What's his incentive? He's going to take the other half of the mos as a halva, which means milvel otzad, he makes a kinyan on those mos, so 50% is his. And what's beckoning him, what's seducing him, he's going to take that 50% of the mos, invest it, and he thinks he's going to make a crash landing. And Enoch Inami, the profits go to him. So it's worth it for him to A, guarantee half of this money, so, and B, take the other half as a halva, which means that the other half he's going to guarantee he'll return it, but in the meantime, all the profits that he accrues on that 50% are all his. So from perspective of capital, you know, he doesn't deserve all the profits because he's not putting forth the capital. So he's going to guarantee that the owner of the mos is going to get back his mos, but on 50%. He's going to take profits. Now again, all that I'm presenting to you is going to have to be examined and re-examined because there's so many different brises and so many different shittas in the Rishonim. But this is the, you know, this is just the way of kicking off the sugya, getting it started. Now, from what I told you so far, does anybody here in the room foresee a possible problem called ribbis? Don't all answer at once. I can't hear so many voices. You know, the Chazal say, Trei Koli Lo Mishtamoy.
It's a halva. He gives back more money than he got. You
know? Exactly. What's going to happen now is if on the second half of the Mos, the Shaliach is called the Lover, then what are we going to do with the profits? In other words, in event that barley goes up in value, let's say the Chitin would be bought at 10, you know, that was the amount of money that the Baal HaMos gave over to the Shliach, 10. It turns out that the Shliach invested in barley, the barley went up to 12. So what happens with the increment, that extra 2? So if you can, again, I'm fast forwarding just for a second to show you that if you look back 2 lines down, it says, Im Hosiru Hosiru Le'emtza, which is line 4 on the page. So if you underline for a moment those words and focus on that, and then we'll read the Gemara and I'll fill in the missing blanks, it comes out that that increment, that profit of 2, is going to be split, that's called ba'emtza, between the Baal HaMos and the Shliach. And if you ask me from the perspective of the Baal HaMos, he's in a great situation here. Of course, number one, he's guaranteed his initial investment. Number two, he may make 50% on the profit if it appreciates. If, on the other hand, it goes down in value and there's a loss here, then that's the Shliach's headache. Again, even that's not exactly accurate, because what I'm telling you now is only because he, the Baal HaMos, told him to buy wheat and the Shliach decided to buy barley. It would seem that if the Shliach decides to fulfill the request of the Baal HaBayis, the Baal HaMos, as it was originally formulated, and he went out and he bought wheat, then this is basically a business investment with a risk element on the part of the Baal HaMos. Do chitin go up or they go down? So what's going to happen is that the Shliach is now going to buy chitin at the rate of 10 for whatever volume you can get at the market on that day, and then he's going to try to resell it and find a buyer who's willing to pay a higher price.
Isn't this heter isko? Is that getting in?
So now Jonathan is saying the following. Let me just repeat my question and then get to your answer, John. The question is as follows: if the Shliach decides to buy barley, then we said that at that particular point, at least with regard to 50% of the most that he received, he becomes the Baal HaBayis. He's sort of in the driver's seat. And he's going to split the profits on that 50% with the Baal HaMos. It's worth it for the Shliach, who doesn't have any money in his pocket, to enter into this deal. He's clever enough to read the predictions, hopefully it'll come true, that it's worth it at this particular moment to invest in barley, buy barley and sell it at a higher price. You're going to get, albeit only half the profits, but if he's very confident, he's going to make half the profits without starting with a penny in his pocket. From the Baal HaMos' perspective, he can get half the profits without doing a thing. He's not doing all the financial work here. He's not going out to the market and seeing what to buy. Maybe it's better to invest in barley than in wheat. He's not trying to find the highest buyer who will pay the highest price, you know, for his barley. None of that. So if the deal goes through in a successful way, the Baal HaMos gets quite a bit of profit. The Shliach from his part will make a profit, albeit 50% of the profit will be his. And he didn't start with a dime in his pocket. So that's good. That's good news for the Shliach. So everybody's happy here. That's again assuming that the price of barley went up. But now we have the problem of ribbis. Why? Because the very moment that the Shliach decided that he's going to take the money that was earmarked for wheat and spend it, invested in barley, at that moment, at least on 50% of that mos, he becomes a lover. And he borrows those mos. Now, who's the malveh in that case? Obviously, it's the Baal HaMos. If the Baal HaMos is the malveh, he's enjoined by Torah law from getting back more than he gave. So on the 50% that was now transformed into alvah, if he's going to get not just, let's say, 5 back from the original 10, but he'll get 6 back from the original 10, because if it went up to 12, he's going to get one of the two profit, then he's made a profit on giving his mos. To make profit on mos is ribbis.
But isn't it, you know, we were saying that it's like a halva, but it's not really a classic halva, because it's partially a business deal. So it's
John is saying that it's sort of like a heter iska, meaning when I borrow money, when let's say it the other way around, when the bank borrows money from me and I make a deposit, so on the malva, the bank is the lova. The bank is going to give me interest on my money, and ostensibly that should be ribbis. So if I'm, you know, if I'm out there in the Bank of London or whatever it's called, so that's not a problem. Bank of England, there's no such thing as a Bank of London. It's interesting, in many countries in Europe, you know, every city has its own bank. But if the Bank of England pays me more than what I pay them in interest, that's not a problem, because you're allowed to take interest from a guy. But if I'm here in Israel, for example, and I'm getting it from Bank Leumi, which presumably is owned by Jews, I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm just making that assumption, then the bank is paying me more than what I gave them. So that's where Heter Iska comes in. And as you know, me and the bank become partners in a business investment. And that's more or less, I think, what Mitch and John, what you're saying here, that on the 50%, which we call a halva, the profits of which will be divided between the shliach and the baal mos, that's not ribbis, because they become partners in that investment.
So it's not
ribbis, because
it's not ribbis if there's a profit, but if there's a loss.
If it's a loss, so now
he's guaranteed the baal mos is going to get his back.
So he has to guarantee that the Baal HaMos gets back 50% as a pikadon and another 50% as alva. And in that sense, as we said before, the Baal HaMos is in a very superior position. He's really guaranteed, like it's a win-win situation, or at least a no-loss situation, a possibility of a win. And he's not collecting ribbis because of the partnership element here. But one second, I wanted to say something and I forgot what I wanted to say. Oh, so again, all this Alfie is very good if what? If the value of barley appreciates. Now let's turn it around the other way. Supposing the buyer on this barley, right, which was sold by the shliach, is going to pay less than 10. Let's say he's going to pay only 8. In which case, the shliach now is going to take that 8 and present it to the Baal Bais. The Baal Bais is now suffering a loss of 2. So why, in a business arrangement, if it's a partnership, why is the Bais going to tell us that in pichso lo, that if the value of the barley went down, that loss is going to be sustained by the shliach exclusively? And he, the shliach, is going to have to take out a pocket, he's going to write out a check to cover the other two. He has absolutely guaranteed the Baal HaMos, whether b'toras pikadon on 50%, whether b'toras halva on the other 50%, that the Baal HaMos will get back his money. What happens there in that case? It's a funny kind of partnership. It's a partnership, but only, but conditional upon profits. Is the partnership null and void if instead of, you know, there was a change in the reversal in the market situation and the value of barley, instead of going up as anticipated, went down? So here's where the Rishonim go back to the concept of shlichus. And what does that mean? There's a halacha of shliach sheshino mishlichuso. It's a very, very complicated sugya. It's in Masechta Gittin. I once researched it quite thoroughly, but Ayin Shom, you know, you'll have to research it on your own. I wrote in Hadarom about it many zillions of years ago. Not exactly Shlichus Yad. Shlichus Yad only applies to Pikadon. Here we're dealing with half Pikadon and half Halva. But there's something called Shliach Sheshina. And as I said, it's a complicated sugya, but there are many different sub-categories. There's one category where the Baal sends a get to his wife through a shliach, and he tells him to find his wife in Moscow. And the shliach went ahead and he found this guy's wife in Leningrad. That's one case of a shinui. And the Gemara says that there we understand that the Baal didn't want the word to get out in Leningrad that he was divorcing his wife. He would be embarrassed in Leningrad, he was more happy in Moscow, or whatever it is. But then it goes on to other cases, there are other categories, where he tells him to find his wife in the Aliyah, in the attic, and instead he gave the Shliach decided to give the get to his wife in the bayis, and not in the house itself, not in the attic. That's also Shliach Sheshina Shlichuso. In Afrash's Truma, he sends the Shliach to be Mafresh Truma, you know, Mina Beinanis, and he went in, he was Mafresh Truma Mina Idis. You know, that's also a Shinu. There are many cases of Shliach Sheshina Bishlichuso. And the rules are very subtle, as to, you know, complex. When it's called a Shinu, and therefore it undermines the Shlichus, and when it doesn't. And what we're going to see here is a funny kind of halacha of Shliach Sheshina. And it works like this. It's really almost laughable, but the fact that the Shliach decided to invest in barley instead of wheat, and whether or not that's called a Shliach Sheshina, it works in a very strange way. If the shliach was absolutely professional and reliable, and proof is in the pudding, then barley went up in value, so he was really a great financial investor, then that shini is not called a shinui, because included in this deal, in this arrangement, was not just that the shliach served as a shikyan gold to go out to the market, buy and sell wheat, but he was there as a shtickel partner in a business investment. So that clearly the Baal HaMos is vesting, again, I don't want to, it's a pun to use, but he's vesting a certain element of reliability in the shliach and giving him some room for freedom of choice here to invest in something better than wheat. But now we get to the situation where the investment turned out to go sour, and instead of barley going up in value, went down in value. So at this point, we have a new principle that the Rishonim are mechadish here within the context of shlichus, that a shinui, which is called, instead of a tikkun, it's called ma'aves, ma'uvas. Ma'uvas means it's a distortion. Instead of rectifying and improving, it's a drawback in the shlichus. What word should I be using here? It's a deficit in the shlichus. You following what I mean?
A deficiency.
In that case, the mishaleach who sent him, the Baal HaMos, has a right to say, you're no longer serving me as a mashliach. So once again, it's a little bit unfair here, because the Baal HaMos is in the driver's seat and everything works on his behalf, and we tip the scale in his favor. It's a win-win situation. Does the shliach, when he decides to invest the Baal HaMos' money into barley instead of wheat, does he continue his status as a shliach? Or is he mafkia his status as a shliach? All that is going to depend upon the final results. Not on the Maisa, but on the Totsas HaMaisa. We're going to check it out and see what happened Bashetach. If Bashetach, he did a good investment, Adarava, you're my man. You know, we have a good partnership agreement. You know, I'm 50%, we're going to split the profits. If, on the other hand, the shliach went ahead and made a bad business investment, and barley went down and depreciated. Then the Baal Hamol has the right to turn to the shliach and says, "You know what? I commissioned you to buy wheat. You're not serving as a very good financial investor. And by the way, this might give the shliach an extra element of incentive to work overtime to find that one buyer of barley who's going to pay more than what he paid of the Baal Moses money when he purchased the barley. And it might mean that he has to wait a certain amount of time. I don't know how long barley can last, if they have refrigeration or they don't. But you're going to have to really, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Scan the market, you know, till you finally find a guy who's so desperate to buy barley that he's going to offer you a higher price than what you paid for. That's the incentive. But if at the end of the day it was a bad investment, period, finito, you know, there's no way of finding such a buyer because the entire market was flooded with barley or nobody's interested in buying barley. So then, in that case, it was a bad investment. It's almost as if, but don't quote me on this, Iglai Milsulam Afreya, we now know that he was not really a financial advisor at all. And that's called Litikune Shtartich Velola Vase. I sent you to do good for me and not to do bad for me. You made a decision and you deviated from my instructions. At that point, my friend, you're on your own. You're no longer, you know, serving.
Let's, even if he changes what the Mashalach said, as long as the result is the same, it shouldn't be a problem.
And yet, Benji, it doesn't work like that. That's what I want to tell you. Take a look at Gittin, I think it's Daf Chof Tes, and you'll see, you know, if he sent it to one city with the get, and he went to the wrong city, I could, but there are other cases where there's a new din in Shlichus, and has nothing to do with Lavuse, Loshati.
Because Dibur is part of the...
Correct. That the Dibur and the Minui defines the parameters in the scope of the shliach. So if I sent you to the Aliyah,
right. Don't
go to the Bais, so vice versa. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. That's the complicated sugya of shliach shashina.
When you're giving psak, you have a case, and this would be a classic example of moving the goalposts, because you're changing the whole situation as a result of what
you mean. It has a ripple effect on the whole,
correct,
on the whole game, but, so to speak.
But and even more so in the case of where he gives them something, a garment to dye black, and he dyes it red, or whichever way. Before, we said it's gazela as soon as you dye the wrong thing. So why don't you say in this case, if you bought wheat instead of barley, why don't you say
that? Excellent. So what you're saying now, Alfie, is what Rabbi Yochanan said even before you. Okay, now let's understand what motivated Rabbi Yochanan to introduce the sheet of Rabbi Meir that we spoke about, that when the dyer, instead of dyeing the wool red, he dyes it black, he becomes a gazlan. Why does Rabbi Yochanan have this agenda, so to speak, to introduce Rabbi Meir? So for that we have to read those lines of the Gemara that we have to fill in. And the Gemara says the following. And now we're on line 2 on Kuf Beis Amid Beis. Tanya Chada, and whenever you see that, you know that there's going to be another Brisa coming around. But in the first Brisa, it says, Impichsu, if the value of barley depreciated, is Pachasu Lo, that loss is going to be suffered, is going to be sustained by the Shliach. And therefore the Shliach is going to have to make up for that loss of 2, in the case of 10 that went down to 8. And by the way, that statement you'll see is going to be common even to the second Brisa. Both Brises are in agreement on this. But what happens in event that the value of barley appreciated? The imosiru hosiru lo. Which means that the shliach gains all the profits in this case. So if barley was purchased by the shliach at 10 and now he sells it for 12, he, the shliach, pockets the 2. And this sounds very strange to our ears, because why does the shliach have a right to pocket all the profits? What's in it for the Baal Hamos? Meaning, if let's say I go to a financial advisor and he tells me invest in AT&T is going to go up, I know, some stock on the market, or hedge funds, or whatever it might be. So I understand that either I pay him a commission for his brilliant work, or I pay him even a percentage of the profits, but I got to get something out of it. It turns out here in the first brisa, and that's what we're going to see, the second brisa is a lot easier to understand, that the Baal HaMos gains absolutely nothing. Why? Because im hosiru, hosiru lo, and the word lo here means the shliach. So the shliach gets all the profits. I understand very well what's in it for the shliach. He's not investing a dime, and yet he may make a good landing if he makes a good business investment. But chutz, you know, at least guarantee the Baal HaBayis that if there's a profit here in this deal, he should get part of the profit. And that's the second price. So we'll come back to the first price in just a minute. But let's first read the second price. So Tony Chada, the second price, says, Im Pichasu is Pchaso Lo. So again, the same as the first price at this point. If the value of barley goes down, that loss is sustained by the Shliach. But Im Osiru, Im Osiru, Osiru Leemtza. Now it makes sense that the Baal HaMos is going to take a share, 50% share in the profits. That's logical. So Rabbi Yochanan is going to address two problems here. Number one, how do we resolve the contradiction between these two prices? And number two, which I think is perhaps even a more pressing issue, how does the first price make any sense? Why would the Baal HaMos give over his mos to someone as a profit-making business venture and yet get no profits whatsoever? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, lo kasha. So officially, Rabbi Yochanan is addressing the first question that I mentioned, meaning how to reconcile this theory between two prices. Ha Rabbi Meir, v'ha Rabbi Yehuda. Ha, the first price, Rabbi Meir, di Omar, shinui kone, which means that when the Uman dyes the garment red instead of black, or black instead of red, he's kone b'shinui, and Rabbi Meir activates the principle called Mishana Midas Baal HaBayis, harehu gazlan. And once he becomes a gazlan, he, the dyer in this case, the tzavah, gets a kinyan on the wool. And as a result, he'll have to pay kishas hagzeil the value of the wool, but he owns the wool now. And he can sell the wool on the market at a profit. Says Rabbi Yochanan, let's apply the logic and the underlying principle of Rabbi Meir to our case, specifically in the first brisa, when Reuven gives Moses to Shimon, and he tells him, be my shliach, and purchase wheat. And now the shliach went ahead. Shimon purchased barley. That's called Mishana Midas Baal HaBayis. He deviated from the will of the Baal HaBayis. According to Rabbi Meir, becomes a gazlan. And therefore, at the very moment he becomes a gazlan, he becomes chayev in the ten, you know. But the relationship between these mos and the Baal HaMos is completely severed, because he's no longer operating as a shliach of the Baal HaBayis, he's now operating as a gazlan. So he takes the money of the Baal HaBayis, invests it in barley. According to Rabbi Meir, he's Mishana Midas Baal HaBayis, like the dyer who dyes it black instead of red. He becomes a gazlan. Now he becomes a gazlan. So he owns these mos for good or for the opposite. It all depends on what happens. If he can find a buyer to buy the barley at a lower price than another buyer when he subsequently sells it to the second buyer and he makes a profit, that's great. If on the other hand he can't find a second buyer who's willing to live up to the price that he sold to the first buyer, then he's at a loss, but it's all his money because he's a gazlan on the money. So what does he owe to the Baal HaMos? He owes the Baal HaMos the full value of the 10 that he received, and therefore in pixo, pixo lo, in mos zero, zero lo. Everything is on the shoulders of the shliach because he's no longer the shliach. He now became a gazlan. Veha, but the second brisa is Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Shinui Eino Kone. If the Uman changes the color, he doesn't make a kinyan, and that wool that's now been dyed black instead of red belongs to the Baal Hatzemer, the Baal Bayis who hired the Uman. And so too here in the case of a Shliach who was sent to purchase Chitin and instead he purchased Siorin. He is not a Gazlan Kona Vishinu according to Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, if he still retains his original status, which as we said before was half Pikadon and half Lover, then on the profit of two, he will take half. And that's called the Mosiro Hosiro Lamsa. So again, let's understand. The first Brisa also agrees fundamentally to this principle of Hosiro Baemsa, meaning if it goes up in value, they split the profits. That was the nature of the deal and the partnership agreement between the Baal Hamos and the Shliach. No one denies that, not even the first Brisa. But the first Brisa says that deal is completely invalidated. It's thrown overboard by virtue of the fact that we have a principle called Kol HaMishana Midas Baal HaBayis Nikra Gazlan. And Rabbi Yochanan's analogy between the case of the Tzaba, who colors it the wrong color, and the case of the Shliach, who buys something other than deviating from the will and the instruction of the Baal HaBayis, both these cases are analogous, are equal, and in both cases, the Uman becomes a Gazlan, the Shliach becomes a Gazlan, and then whatever happens henceforth, that's all relevant to, only exclusively to the former Uman who's now the Gazlan, the former Shliach who's now the Gazlan, and he pays Kishas HaGzir. That's Rabbi Meir. So again, as I emphasize, in Rabbi Yochanan's frame of reference, the understanding of the agreement between the Baal HaMos and the Shliach is identical to both the first Brisa and the second Brisa. The only difference is that whereas the first Brisa activates the principle of Kol HaMishana, making him into a Gazlan, so at the moment that the Shliach decided to buy barley according to the first Brisa, henceforth it's the one who's in the driver's seat now, who's going to sustain either losses or gain profits, is the Shliach. He's now the Gazlan. And that reflects the Shita Rav Meir. The second Brisa says, no, the original agreement is still in place. Because I hold like Rav Yehuda, there's no such thing as Kol HaMishana as Nasa Gazlan. So again, I just emphasize this for the third time. The first Brisa agrees that this was a business partnership in which they would split the profits. But Medvar Mamurim, if the Shliach had not converted himself, so to speak, into a Gazlan, and Rav Meir holds at the very moment that he was Mishana, he becomes a Gazlan.
So if he would have invested in the wheat as told, and it went up, it'd still be Mechza
Hosiro Lemza, even according to the first price. It's only the moment that he does this Shinui, that's called HaMashana Midas Baal HaBayis Nikra Gazlan.
That because Rav Meir holds that is the core essence of a Shlichus, or because this is unique Shlichus?
I don't know if you have to get... You see, I don't think it's necessarily Shlichus. It's any kind of an agreement in which you're operating on my behalf, so to speak. Like, for example, I don't know if you have to call the Uman a Shliach. I mean, you could, but I don't think it's necessary. Kol HaMishana Midas Baal HaBayis, when the Uman colors the dye black instead of red, I don't know if you have to say that he was Mishana Mishlichuso. He became a Gazlan by converting the object into a black sweater instead of a white sweater, or a red sweater, I should say, right? But whenever Reuven appoints Shimon for whatever he appoints him, whether it's a shlichus, whether it's a business investment, whether it's a consignment for umnus and to be his poel, in all these cases, Shinui is going to, according to Rabbeinu, sever the relationship, and it now becomes replaced by a relationship between a gazlan and an exile. Maskif La Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Lozer is not happy with Rabbi Yochanan. Why is that? mimai. Why do you assume an analogy between Rabbi Meir in the case of the Uman and the case here of the first Brisa of the Balamos who sent the Shliach to buy wheat? Dilma, perhaps. Ad kan lo ka'am Rabbi Meir. When, in what context did Rabbi Meir insist that call him Mishana Nasa Gazel? That's only Ella, the midi de chazile legufe. I need a red sweater. I don't need a black sweater. My wife wears red. I bought it for my wife. She doesn't wear black. Lama zon, right? You made a shinui. Rabbi Meir says that's such a drastic shinui. Who wants a black sweater? They commissioned you to paint it red. That's called midi de chazile legufa. Legufe. Gufe means for the balabais himself. Shimush le balabais. And therefore the Baal Bayis wants something red and not black. That's a radical change. You're not presenting the Baal Bayis with that object that he asked for. That's called a shinui. That makes him into a gazan, according to Rabbi Meir. Aval, but in this case of the Baal Amos, who commissioned the shliach to buy wheat, that was a business investment. The Baal Mos is not interested in baking bread for his table or offering it for lunch to his family. That's not what motivates him. This entire complex arrangement between the Baal Mos and the Shliach to purchase X and then sell X at a higher price in order to bring a profit, that's called Lischora. Is Lo Amar. Rabbi Meir never said anything about the case of Schora. In the case of Schora, which motivates the Baal Amos to get more money for his money, he's not going to get all finicky and, all huffy-puffy because he brings back something black instead of red or barley instead of wheat. Tachlis, did you make a profit or did you not make a profit? If instead of making a profit on wheat, you decided that the market is ripe for buying and selling barley, so adarabah, that's a great thing. That's l'schora. So why would Rabbi Meir activate the principle of kol mishaneh in the case of schora? Ela om Rabbi Lazar hava ha Rabbi Meir. I'd rather assume that both prices were authored by Rabbi Meir. V'lo kasher. I, Rabbi Yochanan's issue about what? About the how to reconcile the two prices. Lokasha. Kan l'achilo v'kan l'schora. When does Rabbi Meir activate the principle of kol mishana nasa gazel? That's only in the case of achila, which is called l'tzora chazile l'gufe, l'shimush aguf. He wants something for himself. Then you make a shinui, that's gazel. But in a case of schora, which is the subject of the brisa, Rabbi Meir insists that he's not called a gazlan when he takes the money of the Baal Amos and invests it in barley. On the contrary, he thinks he's doing the best, he's doing the best deal that he possibly can on behalf of the Baal Amos to bring in as much profit, maximize the profit margin as much as he can. The only thing is, as I said before, the name of the Mefarshim, that the reason why Pichso Lo is because the principle of L'tekune Shtartich V'lo Lavase, which means that when you make a bad move and you change from the original instruction, you, the Shliach HaMafkia, your status is a Shliach, and at that point you suffer all the losses from the depreciation, the market depreciation of the ball. But Rabosa, again, just to emphasize the point that Rabbi Yochanan did a great service for us. Rabbi Lezer is not happy with it, but Rabbi Yochanan did a great service for us because not only did Rabbi Yochanan reconcile the contradiction between the two brises, but he also explained to us within the context of the first brisa what would have motivated the Baal Amos to enter into a deal in which the shliach invests his money, makes all the profits. Who would do such a thing? Only a meshugana would do such a thing. I bring capital to the table. You bring intelligence to the table. Let's split the profits. And yet the first price says that everything, whether it's pluses or my assets or defense, it all accrues to the shliach. So why did the Baal Bais get involved in this kind of thing? The answer is that the original agreement was that they would split the profits. The first price is only insisting that Kol HaMeshaneh Nasa Gazlan, because he bought barley instead of wheat, correct? Let's say the Baal Bais thought that wheat was a good investment, or at least a, you know, a low risk investment. I'm not interested in barley. Barley fluctuates like like horses eat barley, whatever. So why do I want that? So at that moment in time, that's where you become a Gazlan, Mr. Shliach, and the deal is off. The partnership is null and void. But at least I understand full well why the Baal Bais got into this deal, because he was hoping he would make a profit on the deal. And in fact, if the Shliach would have purchased what?
Wheat.
Then they would have split the profits. Machku alav v'marof.
Would they have split the losses?
If what? If he invested in wheat, and they would split the losses. Correct.
If all he was doing was following the instructions.
I'm not sure. It all depends on the nature of the agreement. There are different types of agreements. Sometimes the Baal Amos would say to me, look, I want a win-win situation. I'm giving you money. You're using your business acumen. Make sure you make a profit. If you don't, that's your loss. Other cases would be where we're full profit. You know, we're full partners, both for good things and for bad things.
So once the Baal Bais tells him what to buy, it's not likely that he's relying on the business acumen of the shliach at all. He told him what to do.
Again, because the Baal Bais has two thoughts that cross his mind. They sound contradictory, but maybe we'll make a mizug out of them. Right? His first thought is, I want a guarantee in a low-risk kind of investment that I won't take a loss. His second thought is that maybe this guy, you know, who's, you know, a graduate of Wharton, you know, the Wharton School of Business, you know, and then he graduated first in his class at the University of Pennsylvania, maybe he's smarter than I am. And he'll make he'll make a killing on the market. So he's got those two contradictory thoughts, and we have to somehow integrate them. Machu, I love my Rava. What's my Rava?
Israel.
Israel, Eretz Yisrael.
They mocked
him. Right. And Machuola means they sort of laughed at him, right? They were not happy with Rabbi Yochanan. But for a different reason, not because of the objection of Rabbi Eliezer, which was, why do you accuse Rabbi Meir of going this far in the case of Leschora? But rather, I don't understand your logic according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because you're telling me, Rabbi Yochanan, that the second Brisa was authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Which means that in the case of a shliach who purchased barley instead of wheat, Rabbi Yehuda would say that he's not a gazlan, and the principle of Rabbi Meir Kol HaMeshaneh was never accepted by Rabbi Yehuda. That's not so. V'chimi hodio lebal achitin sheyakne chitin lebal amos. There's a problem here, says. Say the B'nai Marofa. When the shliach goes out to the market and he's selling, I'm sorry, when the shliach goes out to the market and he's got money, right? So he's buying with that money barley. Correct? And now the Mocher, who's selling barley, is going to pay a certain price, and that money is going to go to the Baal Hamos. Then I don't understand. The one who is selling barley, to whom is he selling the barley? To the best of his understanding, he's selling it to the shliach. But in fact, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because of the nature of this agreement, he's selling it, unbeknown to him, to the Baal Amos. being Levi. Levi is selling barley to Shimon, meaning Shimon is the one who's standing in front of Levi, ironing out, hammering out this deal. But in truth, Shimon is making this deal, this sale, on behalf of Reuven. And the Bnei Marava assume the following principle. You cannot create what's called Das Makne, thinking that you're selling something to Reuven, to Shimon in this case, we'll take it, when in truth you're selling it to Reuven. Which means that when I sell something, I have to know exactly who the person to whom I'm selling it is.
Why?
The reason for that might be because of what we call Das Makne. I'll give you an example of Das Makne. Let's say, just 1 second. Let's say, for example, I want to make a kinyan on produce that's growing in a field. In order to do so, I need what's called hagbah, or meshicha, right, which is called a kinyan yad. Instead, what I do is, I throw my body onto the produce, and I yell and scream, I'm just dramatizing, it's mine. So in English we say first come, first serve, but in this case we're not going to say first come, first serve. The halacha is, it's a sugi b'metzia, that we remove him bodily from the produce and first come, first serve. Whoever comes now becomes first come, first serve. Why? Because the halacha of das in Kinyan requires a very specific honed in das. And that das is a das that's related to, number one, the object, number two, the value, and number three, the person. Only if you can check off all three boxes do you have Das Kinyan. Meaning, there are three elements or variables that go into making a Kinyan. One is the buyer, the other is the seller, and the third is the merchandise. The Das is a prerequisite for all those three elements. So the Makna has to know who the Kona is, the Kona has to know who the Makna is, and both have to know the value of the object and its value. That's what we're going to assume right now, Mitch. I mean, maybe we'll, as we go along, we'll be able to flesh it out a little better, because you'll soon see that not everyone accepts the premise of the Bnei Marava, but the premise that they're operating with and the base on their attack against Rav Yochanan is that how can the buyer clinch a kinyan if he thinks mistakenly that he's selling it to Shimon when in truth he's selling it to Reuven? Now watch this. Supposing the shliach would buy wheat instead of barley,
the same thing.
Then the same question, the same objection of Bnei Marava should come back, which basically means that I don't understand how a shliach could ever buy anything on behalf of a shaleach. That's what the Gemara is going to develop. V'chimi odio lebal achitin sheyakne achitin lebal amos. The shliach presents himself to the seller as if he's buying, and you're telling me, Rabbi Yochanan, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the shliach is not a gazlan when he buys barley instead of wheat, and therefore he serves as the shliach of the Baal Amos. But how can he do so? Even if he's not a gazlan, I have a more fundamental problem. How can he make a kinyan on this barley or wheat? Again, it always switches in both directions. When the Machne the machne doesn't have any kavon, any das, to be machne to the Baal HaMos. And the answer would seem to be that when he sells it to the shliach, then even the profits should accrue to the shliach, because the kinyan could only be chal according to the name Arava vis-a-vis the shliach and not vis-a-vis the mishaleach, because the mocher is totally unaware of the existence of the mishaleach, so his das is to be machted to the shliach. Maskif law Rav Shmuel, this is a very rare kind of Talmudic development or dialectic. Somebody gets up and asks a kasha, that's called maskif law. Well, it doesn't say maskif law, it says machu Allah b'nei marofa, right? And now maskif law is an attack on the attack. And who is the attacker in this case? Rav Shmuel bar Sasrati, not the famous Shmuel that we're familiar with. If the assumption, the premise of the Bnei Marava is that any sale in order to be valid has to be a das machne in which the mocher knows exactly to whom he's selling it, then if the shliach was given the instruction to buy chitin, he went ahead like a good boy and he bought chitin, then the Baal HaMos shouldn't be kona in that case either, because the mocher doesn't know that he's in fact selling the chitin to Reuven the Baal HaMos. So basically, why are you attacking Rabbi Yochanan with an unacceptable premise? If we accept your premise, and now we're talking to the Bnei Marava, then we never had a problem if the shliach had in fact purchased chitin. No brisa had, not the first brisa, not the second brisa, had a problem if the shliach had gone ahead and implemented his shlichus exactly as it was meant to be. He was consigned to purchase wheat, and he purchased wheat. Then the Baal HaMos gets the wheat. How is that so? And by the way, as a parenthetical insert, maybe according to the Bnei Marava, there's going to have to be two kinyanim over here. First, the shliach is going to have to be koneh from the mocher, and that's going to be a kinyan for the shliach. Then, in stage two, the shliach is going to have to effectuate a kinyan with the mishaleach. Two kinyanim. Not good. I'll tell you why it's not good. Because what happens if the shliach decides, I'm not going to be machned back to him, I got a good bargain here, a good deal, I'm not interested. But again, the premise here in all the brises is that if the shliach had in fact purchased wheat as he was commissioned, then the wheat accrues to the Baal HaMos. Why is that so? The mocher never had in mind the Baal HaMos. Omer Rabbi Abbo, shiny, chitin, vechitin, dishlichuseyu, ka'avdi, vechi Baal HaBayis, dummy. He says the following. If the shliach went ahead and as he was told to do so, he purchased chitin, and therefore his status as a shliach remains, says Rabbi Avo, shluchok shel adam kimoso. Here, even the Bnei Marava would agree that there's no need for the mocher to know about the mishaleach. Why? Because the shliach is the mishaleach. I don't mean physically. But Al Pidin, he is the long arm of the Mshalech. You know, here you can really get into all the famous Chakiros. Are you gentlemen familiar with we call it Yeshiva Shereid? You familiar with that phrase? No? Okay. So Mitch, let me tell you, in the Yeshivas, they have Reid. Reid means like talk, meaning they talk a certain language in the Yeshivas. There's certain Chakiros that like, no matter what yeshiva you go to, in the political spectrum, this much you know. So in shlichus, the raid is, what is the status of a shliach? Is he the long arm of the mishaleach? Yado ki yado. Or he is an independent agent functioning on his own, but the results of his action, what we call the chalos, accrues or is related back to the mishaleach. Is he actually doing the maisa and physically I give you an unbelievable chiddush. The pre-chadish wants to say there's halach in get that the Baal has to own the get. And the pre-chadish wants to say that if a Baal sends a shliach and the shliach buys the get with his own money, because you always have to pay for the document and the sofer and so forth, then the shlichus is valid. Why? But the Baal doesn't own. He says no. The shliach actually represents the Baal. And all the conditions that are necessary for this gerushin could be fulfilled through the shliach himself. And the pre-chadish quotes a Gemara in Kiddushin as a right. The Gemara says that shliach eino nasa eid. Normally, I'm not allowed to testify about anything that's relevant to myself. But if I'm a shliach, why can't I testify on behalf of the shalech? It's not relevant to me. I don't gain anything by it. And yet, we paskin ein shliach nasa eid. The Gemara quotes two opinions about it. Says the Pre-Kadosh, you know why ain't Shliach Nasa Eid? Because the Shliach actually physically represents the Mishalech. He's his Yad HaRichta. So he's in effect testifying about himself. And Eid on the name of Al-Atzma. If we apply that logic here, I see we have another 2 minutes, but if we apply that logic here, then the Bnei Marav will agree that the Das Makneh of the mocher to sell it to the shliach is valid for the mishalech, because the shliach is really embodies or represents the mishalech. He's the Yad HaRichta, if that's your definition of shlichus. What was the kash of the Bnei Marav, the objection against Rabbi Yochanan? But if instead of buying wheat, the shliach went ahead and bought barley, and then he's mishalev shlichus, so he's no longer shliach. So how could the Braisa tell me, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that he still functions at least to clinch the kinyan on behalf of the mishalech? The mocher doesn't have any idea that he's selling it to the mishalech. All right. So I think at this point we'll have to stop. I wish everyone the balance of a Hanukkah sameach. Next time we get together is when?
Tuesday.
On Tuesday. So that's after Hanukkah. Even Monday is after Hanukkah, right? The last day of Hanukkah is Sunday. So is Hanukkah. That's a little painful. It went too fast. Which is true for just about everything in life. But especially when you get to holiday and you want to chop a ride and maximize Hanukkah, you know. To wait a full year to next Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. I can make a note of it. Where do we get to?